This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
#KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning.
Today is Monday, April 29th, and this is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey.
And you're listening on, if you are listening, in Corvallis 100.7, in Hood River 91.9, in Portland 90.7, and via the web, kboo.fm.
Yes, indeed. We are your community connection.
So we welcome you this morning. Let me give you our phone numbers, 503-231-8187. You can email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com.
And we welcome your calls today. We solicit your calls today. We are rattling our call coin cup at you today to get you to give us a call, much like when you walk past the corner and you see someone sitting there and they ask you for spare change. It's a moment to connect. It's a moment to recognize another human being. It's a moment to check your conscience and check your pockets and see if you have something. Or maybe because the situation doesn't make you feel comfortable for some reason, it's an uncomfortable impasse with both society's failings, flesh failures, and maybe ourselves. How do you respond? What do you consider to be an appropriate response when you pass someone who is on the street and ask you for spare change? These people have been given many names. Some people call them spangers or spangers. Some people call them flaggers. Some people call them panhandlers. But the bottom line is they're still people regardless. But they elicit quite an interesting array of responses from us. And sometimes those responses move us forward to give, and sometimes those responses just move us forward. I'm really curious to hear today, how do you respond to those people who are on the corners, the byways, the highways, and they ask you for financial help? We know there are a lot of many-layered and vast reasons why. Not everyone who is on the corner asking for change has made life's mistakes. Sometimes life has happened to them. And then there's other times when they decide that they don't want any help. They like the freedom of being out there. Or maybe they have other issues. Maybe they suffer from dual diagnoses or multiple diagnoses, one of which may include drug and substance abuse. Regardless, we're talking about human beings, and how do you respond?
Lisa Figueroa has written a series of articles in Alternate. In January, she wrote an article, Do You Ignore Homeless People? And recently, her most recent article is Why People React Differently to Panhandlers, Hard Times, USA. In these articles, she speaks about her conversation with those who are on the street, whether soliciting money or those who are being solicited. And there's quite a variety of reactions and responses to those. Some people feel a desire to give to those who are young or old or women with children or people with pets. Sometimes people have observed that people of color are more often ignored rather than other people. The observation has been and been varied in been verified in various studies that those who are closer to poverty are probably more willing to give to those who are soliciting help on the street. Those who are rich are less likely. Those who are religious often are driven to give. Of quite a variety of responses that people have to those who are on the street. One person said, you know, at first being constantly ignored wears on you. But then you get so used to it and it's just whatever.
Is it whatever? Give us a call and tell us how you respond. And yeah, maybe today's topic might make you a little uncomfortable because it might reveal a little bit more of yourself than you want. But one of the wonderful things about a talk show is we talk it out. We talk about solutions to problems. We talk about how we respond to problems and we build community. And this is a time maybe to seek some answers or exchange some answers and to exchange perhaps some helpful strategies. And people have a varied response, as we said earlier. We'd like to hear your response. Now, we do have a couple of caveats. We do ask that you not make any rude comments about anyone, because after all, regardless of the state you find them in, this is still people we're talking about. And I know that some folks who are out on the street panhandling or asking for change, sometimes there have been violent encounters, and we recognize that, but we want to look more at solutions and responses that we think maintain all of our humanity. Phone number is 503-231-8187. Now, that series of articles in there, it sounds like you read both of them, the homeless and the one on how do you handle panhandlers. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that really struck me was the fact that the author also mentioned the fact that if we identify with a person beyond just their economic state, that maybe we are more generous. And it's really funny to read that because on one hand, you hear of someone that was interviewed that says, well, you know, if I see somebody with a pet, you know, I'll feed them, I'll give them money. And you read in another line, somebody makes a really rude comment in another set of responses that I read that says, well, you know, if you can afford an animal, you don't need my change, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't think sometimes that people look at the situations that we encounter in life beyond a simple, you know, black-white, simple dichotomy. I'm thinking that if I were homeless on the street, I would like to have a pet at the very least to keep me company and possibly offer protection. Now, that's another mouth to feed, mm-hmm. but I can imagine from having talked to people that it's a pretty bleak experience, you know. So I don't think we really should begrudge them what they can have that gives comfort or helps them maintain
connection to
anything. Anyone.
You know, one thing that I think is important that she points out in her articles is the people awareness of those around them.
Mm-hmm.
And one person comments that sometimes he has money, sometimes he doesn't. But he makes it a point to make eye contact and
yes.
speak to them and to respond yes. to the request.
Yes.
Many people don't. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Do you respond? How do you respond to those who are asking for money on the street? Let's go to Ed. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think how closely you relate to the person kind of determines on how you respond.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been in the military and you see a sign that says veteran, I think you have certain feelings for them. You know, this is a person that is patriotic and did something for their country. And, you know, depending on whatever choices or even things beyond that person's control have put them in that place.
Yes.
But I think also, you have to look at these people as, you know, a part of society. It's just like if you were a person, you know, if you get a cough, you know, you can ignore it. But, you know, it may develop into pneumonia. And at some point, you know, it's going to affect you, you know, maybe much more seriously. And I think it's the same thing with what's happening to society now. So when people see other people standing on the corner, you know, maybe they're far removed from it. Maybe it's just a cough to them. But believe me, if things don't change, if we don't start caring more about what's happening to our society and taking action to change the situation for people, it will turn into something critical.
Thank you so much for your call, Ed.
Okay,
and for
you.
Your words.
Mm-hmm. Our number is here, 503-231-8187. Email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. How do you respond to those who ask for money on the street? Are you one, or have you been one, who ask for money on the street? Let's go to Brian. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey,
good morning. This is a great topic, and the last guy kind of covered what I was thinking, but I just want to say that I don't think this is a symptom anymore. I think, unfortunately, and what the big objection to me is not with the people who panhandle. I don't think that they feel like they have any other choices, you know. But the thing is, it's becoming an accepted norm in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really, really bothers me a lot. And you know, there's a whole, and I don't, unless you've been homeless before or unless you've, you know, been down before, I don't think you would know, but there's an entire industry, including the nonprofit industry, that is built, and people, and nonprofit is not a great word, because they are making money. You know, people are making their living off of homeless people.
Well, how so? When you say that, how so?
Well, you know, there's salaries being paid. You know, there are buildings being bought and sold. There are, you know, just businesses that, I mean, walk into some of the, quote, nonprofits and look at their office furniture. You know, air-on chairs and up-to-date computers. And I'm not talking about the grassroots places. I'm talking about places, you know, that have been actually in business for a long time. And you know, the old return thing, I worked for Haight-Ashbury back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, I'm sorry, down in San Francisco.
Right.
And we returned 45% back into the clinics. Mm-hmm. And which I was like, wow, that's nothing. And then the guy goes, here, let me show you something. And he started calling up all these charities. And it's true. You know, 95% of the money goes to overhead salaries, promotion parties, Hawaiian vacations, you know, conferences. You know, so, you know, there's a lot of money. And all the little, quote, mom-and-pop stores on the corner selling cheap wine and cheap cigarettes and, you know, rolling papers, et cetera. You know, these glass shops, so, these are all profiting off of very low-income, desperately addicted people, you know, for the most part.
So it seems the point that you're making that I picked up is in terms of looking beyond, you know, that individual on the street and look at it as a social problem, as a social issue, because of how not only certain agencies that serve the homeless, but in terms of how our society is set up, we need to reexamine all of that.
Yes, sir. I really honestly believe that. And you know, like, my final comment is the rage in this, the objection is, you know, we can go look at India, where there's a certain subclass of people that are just, you know, I mean, they're expected, and their highest level in society is they will be a beggar.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that is an extreme, but, you know, it is it is established, and it's been established for a very long time. And I want to challenge everybody in this who's listening to this. This is what we're creating. This is what's happening. We are giving our society a whole underclass of people who are destitute and who are accepting, begging for a living. And you know, in our country, you know, I mean, I don't have to go into it. We're spending $10 billion a month on the war. And we have people on the street begging. Literally, that's their whole life.
Yes.
You know, and I'll tell you, if you've ever been on the street, I mean, just to go to the bathroom is like a major undertaking.
Yes, it is.
You know,
yes,
and to stand there all day and beg, it just breaks my heart. You know, and you know, being Air Force guy, I was in the Air Force for 4 years, and you know, fought for my country, and I'm in healthcare now, and I get paid nothing, and all that. To stand there and go, this is my country.
All right.
This is what we've done.
Well, thank you so much
for
your call and your words.
Goodbye now.
Goodbye. So we're going to our next caller. If you want to join the conversation, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Today we're talking about your response to panhandlers, maybe some ways that we can respond better. We'll go to our next caller, Dave. Thank you for holding, Dave.
Hello. Yeah, I've been homeless myself, and I've been in that position. And your last caller, I just wanted to comment on something he said. And the people I like to refer to as poverty pimps, you know, they're making money off poverty.
Yeah.
And whether it's day labor places or plasma centers or, like you said, the places that sell cheap malt liquor or whatever, you know, they're still exploiting people. And as far as, like, how I deal with panhandlers, because I've done it myself, and it's a very degrading position to find yourself in, so I tend to have empathy for them. And I know a lot of the times, if not most of the time, they don't need food, because everybody on the street knows where to get free food in a city like Portland. But they may have other needs, and sometimes you just need to numb yourself to your reality, because it's a pretty crappy reality being on the street. So, you know, that's just what I have to say. It's like, I do try to empathize with them. And if I do have some change, I'll kick it down, you know, because I've been in that position. So I'm not one to judge.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, thank you for your call and for the point you made about connecting both out of experience and out of empathy.
Oh, yeah, sure. You guys are doing a great job. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And email us, as Justin did, at moretalkradio@gmail.com. Justin writes, what a difficult, important topic. My feelings on panhandling seems to change by the day and sometimes by the hour. Some days I give, some days I ignore, some days I simply say hello. It is sad for me to say, but many times it is times that has me walk on by. I'm on lunch, or I need to get somewhere, or they're just things I'd rather be doing by myself. The other thought is that there are services available for these folks that are provided by people better trained than myself to work with the homeless and at-risk population. Then, of course, there are feelings of anger, resentment, and even fear that can crop up. This is a very complicated issue that I imagine is why it has not yet been solved.
And he touches on so many of the reasons why, when we see someone, it's a very interesting conversation inside of us. Do I give? Don't I give? Am I afraid? Why am I afraid? Sometimes we're not really afraid of the person. Sometimes we're afraid of the situation, because we know that sometimes life and our security and comfort is tenuous. And at any moment, that thread that holds our life together could snap and everything unravel. And so for many people, they give as kind of a talisman, if you will, against misfortune. But, you know, sometimes we actually look at the person and we see a person and we think, there before the grace of God go I. How do you respond? 503-231-8187. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning, George.
Good morning. You know, you just said it, there by the grace of God go I. I always ask myself that question, too. And, you know, I've never been a panhandler or had to beg, and I'm well off, but I'm always feels kind of conflicted when I confront a request. I think we like to not be confronted or to be annoyed. I guess it's almost like when someone asks me, paper or plastic? Well, no. Why do I have to make a decision? Or they say super salad. I say salad. They say, well, what kind of dressing? It's almost like...
too many choices.
Yeah, I know. And you know, then I think of... I'd rather give to an organized group like Loaves and Fishes or volunteer for Loaves and Fishes than I would, you know, trying to analyze each individual request. And then I think of Kant's categorical imperative, act in a way that you allow the maximum of your act. Well, what if I give a dollar to this person, mm-hmm. and there's 1,000 of them all lined up? Can
right.
I give $1,000? I'd rather give to K-Boo than, hand out a dollar here, a dollar there. Could I say, well, I'm not going to give to K-Boo because I would rather do it individually on the street. So, in essence, I'm always conflicted, but I would say, I like the fellow just said, sometimes yes, sometimes no. But I always feel guilty if I don't, and I always feel like, well, maybe I've been a little bit had if I do. So, what do I do?
I think it's good that you're conflicted. If you ever get to the point where it doesn't impact you, then I think you and all of us are in trouble.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when you don't give, what do you do? Do you just walk by or do you respond, you know, verbally?
No, I walk by and I feel a little bit guilty. And one time, this sticks in my mind, it happened about 3 months ago. I was going to downtown Portland. I was going to a really nice restaurant and with my wife. And there's a guy right on the corner sitting down, and he asked me to help him. And I generally go into this restaurant, mm-hmm. and have this wonderful meal, and I can't enjoy my meal because I went walk by this guy, so I made sure that I had the proper amount of change when I walked out, and he was still there, and I gave him some money, and he said, you know, God bless you, and that sort of thing, and like I said, it's so sad that we have so many people that have to live in the street.
That's so, it is sad, and it says a lot about our economic system, but the thing that matters most is how we respond. And you responded in a way that you felt maintained both your humanity and that person's humanity and dignity. So it sounds like you have a workable solution, even though some days you're not sure which one to pick.
Okay. Well, paper or plastic.
That's right.
Thanks for listening to me.
You're very welcome.
I know. Bye-bye.
I worked as an AmeriCorps member for a few years, and anybody that's done AmeriCorps knows that you don't have much money, and you usually, if you don't have a good safety net, like, you know, mom and pop and friends, you're on food stamps, and you qualify for other assistance. And the way I was taught, because I was also in management with them and managed Oregon's volunteers with the state office, is that they wanted you to experience the life of the people you were working with on many occasions. Other people said, well, if they paid you too much, you wouldn't leave, and that's true, too. But I remember coming out of a store in Southeast, and this couple asked for some money. They said they were hungry. And so I'm thinking, you know, here I am with my I will get things done for America stamp all across my clothes. And I'm thinking to myself, I've been hungry. I know exactly what this feels like. You know, I go into the store, I take my little food stamps, and I buy them some bread and meat and cheese and, you know, some juice, some lemonade, something. Mm-hmm. And when I come out, they're gone. Yeah. So it touched my heart so much that I hopped in my car and I drove up and down Powell looking for these folks. And when I found them, I said, here, I have some food for you because you're hungry. And they looked at me and said, we just really wanted some money. I had to take my food back to the store, and I told the manager exactly what had happened. He gave me my food stamps back. Now, you know, some people would say, well, I bet you felt burnt, didn't you? But I didn't give because I was looking for any validation. I gave because they said they were hungry and it touched my heart. Now, some of us have had those experiences, you know, like I've had the Sisters of the Road coupons and other things, and I've given to people, and they say, well, I really wanted some money, and I ask them what for, you know, because I'm going to engage. That's me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've heard some stories that, you know, made me kind of change my mind, and I've also had my share of failures. So, you know, we'd like to hear how you have come back from your failures so that, like our last caller, you find a way to maintain that balance for both of you, your humanity and their dignity.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We'll go to Joanne. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Hello. This morning I was listening to Willie Nelson on Democracy Now, and he's 80. Mm-hmm. And I'm remembering my father died at 80 or 81, and I'm knowing that I'm getting near 80. So here's my opinion. As long as we do wars, as long as corporations control this country, and as long as corporations control the world, you will never have real solutions for these problems.
Mm. Well, you know, yes, it's true that we have organized powers that sometimes go beyond our scope of action. But I'm talking about our individual responses. And sometimes our individual responses are all that stand between us and a barbaric nation. And that's not to say that we are not barbaric in some ways. You know, behavior has pretty much pointed that out. But it's on an individual level. You know, it's how we as human beings respond to human beings in dire circumstances that really helps separate us from what I would call the permanent barbarians.
Let's go to our next caller. Our next caller is Courtney. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Well, and you?
Thank you. I'm currently houseless, so I'd like to give you some perspective from the other side.
Thank you.
I've been out there. I've worked all my life. I've raised children here in Oregon. And I used to think that, you know, there were so many services available to people that they could go and get help if they wanted to. They could get housing if they wanted to. And I started getting into advocacy in my church and discovered that people were getting turned down for food stamps for, you know, when they had 8 children for making 3 cents too much.
Yes, that's true.
And that got into my craw so badly, I decided to take on the system. And since then, I've become an activist, and currently I'm working on the Homeless Bill of Rights with Sisters of the Road. But I'm here to tell you that this wonderful system that supposedly exists that everybody thinks is out there to help people doesn't necessarily help everyone. For example, there are only 2 shelters available to women in all of Portland.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And to get in them is a fantastic waiting list that's anywhere from 4 to 6 months long. And jumping through the hoops to get there is incredible. And for those people who are tempted to say to those folks out there panhandling, go get a job, it is actually legal in the state of Oregon to not hire someone because of their status for being houseless.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, what element of being houseless makes it legal? How do they parse that out?
I don't know, but if I went in there and said, hey, you know, I'm trying to work my way out of being homeless, you know, can you give me, you know, help me out or something like that, a lot of people don't know that. You know, the employer can actually turn you down for that because they're thinking, well, you know, you don't have a stable place to stay, how are you going to clean yourself up, which are all valid points. I mean, trying to be out on the street and hold down a decent job is very, very difficult because you have to present yourself decently every day when you walk in the door. At least I want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not all out there doing day labor and, you know, doing yard work. I would love to have an office job, mm-hmm. you know, or something like that. But to do that, I need to have a place where I can keep my clothes,
right.
where I can take
right.
a shower at least every other day. I mean,
right.
I would be picky and say every day. Every day would be ideal.
Mm-hmm. right.
But that's mm-hmm. not possible all the time.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and to do that into a 9-to-5 job or, you know, whatever kind of a job with the services that are only available 9-to-5 is almost impossible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so many, like the 10-year plan to end homelessness that just renamed themselves. They're patting themselves on the back and changed their name recently, actually about 4 months ago, because they figured out in 3 years they're not going to be able to change it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what they do is they say, okay, well, we came up with these partner agencies where everyone can get help. If I don't have help in my agency, I can send you to another agency that will. Well, that sounds really great on paper, but what actually happened was people who were underpaid and overworked. I wish they were overpaid because some of these folks are real gems.
Yes.
But they wind up sending people around and round and round, yes, in circles to other agencies, having never made the phone calls, to, you know, services that never exist. And I've spent months running around in circles trying to get help with things.
Not just months, but sometimes what meager change you can manage to get. And,
yeah,
and you know, sometimes you can get a bus ticket and sometimes you can't. And I know that because I used to hand them out.
I have a friend who's unable to work and survive on very, very low income. And he also often tells me it's a full-time job being poor.
Yes.
I'm just trying to manage the, you know, which office to go to, who do you go to get rent assistance, standing in lines, filling out forms for energy assistance. It's a full-time job.
It is. Mm-hmm. Definitely is. And, you know, a lot of things aren't offered. You know, even things that can be found, you know, what can be found if you know where to look are great.
Mm-hmm.
But, gosh, we don't need any more toothbrushes or soap. Mm-hmm. I think we could all, we could open up a small business, you know, selling those things. But the things that are really, really difficult to be gotten are like feminine products.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard for me to find feminine products. Or, you know, to pay for my phone that I'm currently talking on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or be able to pay for storage so I can keep the very few things,
yes,
that I have, and, you know, when I do get an apartment and I do plan on it. But, you know, there are so many things available to people out there who are addicted to drugs, who are addicted to alcohol and things like that. But, again, you've got to go through the hoops of the program to do that. And that's very, very difficult from what I'm understanding from a lot of people. I mean, you literally have to go into an emergency room and be suicidal and be addicted to something to get help. And I've heard of people being kicked out of emergency rooms, you know, mm-hmm, even saying that. Mm. Because they say, oh, you're just here to get housing.
Wow.
So people like me who aren't addicted to anything except cigarettes and, you know, who want to do better in the world and want a hand up, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So as we wrap up, there's one thing I'd like to hear. When people are asked for change, from your personal experience, what is a good or a helpful response, even if they don't have money or don't want to give? What's a helpful response?
Honesty. Mm. And I always vote for honesty. Honesty, mm-hmm, is a really, really good thing. And you know, understand that standing there with a sign, and I've done it once or twice, and I'm not a fan, because it's extremely humbling.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather go sell street roots where I can give, you know, a service for, you know, the money that I'm given.
Right.
And, you know, but it's extremely humbling standing there and asking someone for something. And if you say, you know, hey, I'm sorry, I'm not able to do that today, you know, or maybe I'll try to catch you next time, or even, you know, the little bit of change you have in your pocket, it all helps. It really, truly does.
Thank you so much for your call and your honesty.
Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney.
Okay.
You,
mm-hmm,
too.
Bye.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey.
Our topic this morning is, how do you respond to people who ask for money on the street? Our numbers, again, are 503-231-8187 or moretalkradio@gmail.com. Give us a call with your response. If you have been on the street, we want that perspective as well. Let's go to Sheila. Good morning.
Good morning. Say, well, first I'd like to give a good word out for Street Roots. I buy it every time. I'm
here,
a person outside of Trader Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
There's a question. that I have, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. There are people out there who are begging that don't need to be. One day, outside of Trader Joe's, there's a young lady sitting on the ground with a sign, lost my home, husband left me, got two kids, and, you know, blah, blah. And I didn't give to her. I just had a feeling it wasn't right. And Jamie, who I purchased my street roots from, said, you know, she's such a phony. Her husband came by a little while ago, you know, and little, just a little background. And what do you do? How do you know? How can, you know, I want to give, and I give a lot, but there are people that somehow I just feel aren't really legitimate. And so I don't want to give, but I don't want to not give to the people who really need something.
Yeah. I think that's a conflict many of us had. One person reminded me, and this person was a person of religious faith, and she said that, you know, it's not my role to judge the other person. I'm only responsible for my action. So whether or not I'm able to perceive how they will use that dollar or not, it's not my job. I have to respond to whether or not I heeded the call. That isn't an easy solution because there are many people, as you suggested, and we want to be as productive and useful as possible. But oftentimes, unlike you at that time, but Jamie, who told you about that young woman, many times we make a quick decision based on, you know, what we think that person is or what that person can or cannot do.
One time I was outside of a store, and there was a young woman, and she asked for money. And instead of giving her money, I took her into the store mm-hmm. and had her pick out some food.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I felt, was a really good solution. But you're not always outside a food store.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But and she was very appreciative, and you could tell she really needed something to eat. Instead of giving her a dollar, I ended up probably spending $5 or $10 on the food.
But you engaged her and had a conversation with her, and I think that in itself was very noble.
Well, very often I do enter mm-hmm. into conversations with people on the street, and I think they feel the sense of respect.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not feeling like they're just a thing there that's begging, and I find that very rewarding, personally. To talk to the people that are in need.
And that right there, for many people, is one of the best responses. I will talk to people. I sometimes throw up a quick prayer so I can, you know, kind of discern what am I feeling. Because I have met people who I have given to, just because I knew. I can't explain how. And then I've met other people for whom it was an uncomfortable thing to even just look at them because the energy between us was just not right.
Right.
You know, and I try to heed that because, you know, your mind will process things faster sometimes than you're conscious of. And I take heed to that, but I always try to respond in a way that gives people dignity, even if I just smile and say, I'm sorry, I don't have anything.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I also mm-hmm. don't give to people who start expounding religion. Because my one question is, I tell them I don't believe in a God, because if there was really a God, he wouldn't allow all the things, the horrors that are going on in this world to happen.
Mm.
And I've had people that thought has never occurred to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they start questioning themselves. Because I think we have to question, and you can't blindly have faith because of what's going on.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so mm-hmm. much for sharing.
You're welcome. Bye. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Thank you for your response. David Sleppy is a photographer who created a book of photography aimed at giving visibility to those who are houseless. And his book is entitled No One Sees Me. And, you know, he asked a person one time, what's the worst part about being homeless? And that person responded simply, no one sees me. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Celeste. This is going to sound terrible, but I'm just going to say it.
Okay.
I tend to give to women, and I tend to give to people of color. I think there is a tendency to idealize some homeless people. Personally, I find the way that some homeless women, the way some homeless men treat women, particularly homeless women, who should be their, who they should regard as sisters, is kind of sickening. I know a lot of them are raped. I know a lot of them are assaulted. If you regard yourself as the downtrodden, I mean, I know some of these people are drug addicted and they have their issues, but if you want to say that you're the downtrodden and you should be treated with respect, then how can you not respect and protect the women among you?
And that is a very good question.
Get that. So I tend not to give to men, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hey, well, thank you for
your
thought and the fact that you gave a very thoughtful response in terms of who you give and do not give. I don't think most people are conscious of their mm-hmm. given or not given. Studies have been shown that people who are dark-skinned or who are dirtier are less likely to receive the contribution than those who appear cleaner or whiter.
Absolutely.
But also, the last caller mentioned her preference to give to women because of the possible abuse women face. So we all make choices, and sometimes we are not as conscious as our last caller. Let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Becca.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Becca.
Hello.
Hi. I would like to say there's a couple things that I've discovered that help me to maintain an open heart.
Mm.
And that is, one, I purchase coupons from Sisters of the Road
mm-hmm.
to give to people who are asking for help. And I purchase them at my co-op, mm-hmm. People's Co-op.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way I found. And another way is I keep, when I travel, energy bars in my car, mm-hmm. and I take along extra food. So that when I'm stopping at the rest stops, I'm generally approached, and then I can give something. And I've found even if I give a little bit, I feel so much better than when I hold back from giving.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's a personal opportunity each time to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can have an open heart.
Yes. Right.
So I appreciate the opportunity, and I think in this society, in this time, our challenge is to connect with people and to find new ways to maintain and open our hearts and expand that.
Thank you, Becca.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts about maintaining an open heart. You and a couple of callers that mentioned Sisters of the Road, if you're interested in them, their number is 503-222-5694, 503-222-5694, or go to sistersoftheroad.org. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're speaking about people responses to people who ask for money on the street. What do you do or not do?
And I also want to offer that if you live in different parts of the city, as I used to live in East Portland, sometimes giving to someone who is out in the numbers, so to speak, a coupon for Sisters of the Rose may not be as convenient, because when I used to hand them out, mm-hmm. I would find, or I would think, or I would even ask, can you get there? Uh-huh. You know? And so I like the fact that she also carried some food or some water.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you see people who are panhandling give back the food or water. Mm-hmm. And remember that you weren't given for you. You were given for them. So if they refuse your gift, you know, assume that that's part of the dynamic that they're caught in. That sometimes, as you've heard callers say, you know, the rawness of the experience is overwhelming. And maybe at that particular moment, whatever else they're challenged with is in their face and not necessarily in yours.
And, you know, when you mention that, sometimes mm-hmm. they give the food back. I
mm-hmm.
mean, you know, you go into a restaurant and you order what you want. So sometimes,
exactly.
you know
right.
that person may not want that energy bar or like the energy
okay.
bar, and recognizing
yeah.
their humanity.
Yeah, and the truth is, yes, beggars can be choosers, you know. People have also mentioned the panhandling and working, and posted on April 24th, and I believe this was the Sarasota Press, was an article about that. It talked about the fact that the city of Sarasota had put a new law in effect, which was going to address panhandling and render it illegal in some places. And a lot of people were really frustrated with that, who were those who were soliciting money. And one person who was interviewed, whose name was Linda, said that, well, she can't even go to a day labor job because she didn't have an ID. Someone had stolen her ID. It's not uncommon when you live on the street to have your belongings stolen. You don't really have any place to put stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would cost her maybe $35, $40 to get her new ID, and mm-hmm. she needed one. Now, she said, true enough, that some places will help you get your ID. So some of the day labor establishments do work with folks, you know, and I'm also aware that they are, as people have called them, sometimes benefiting from that poverty. But there's also the challenge, because this woman was very honest. She says, well, I'm also an alcoholic. She says, I'm living on the street. I can't handle this sometimes. So I literally am trying to decide, do I save up my money for the ID, or do I get some beer and a sandwich, you know? And she recognizes that there's been choices perhaps that she's made, but she wants to make a change. So it's not as though everyone who is out there on the street is dead set on doing the right thing. Sometimes people are just caught up in multiple binds at the same time, and they're trying to negotiate with a hydra of horror, so to speak.
And again, recognizing the complex life all of us live,
mm-hmm.
I think one thing that we also need to recognize that for many of us, we are no different than those people we encounter. We are one or maybe two paychecks from being on the street, and it's becomes difficult for many people. And I think that's why I think studies show that those who are poorer tend to be more generous with
yes.
their giving. They give a higher percentage of their income to charity. Those who are rich give a smaller percentage, and those charity that rich people give to tend to benefit the rich, like the
mm-hmm.
art museums and the symphony.
Mm-hmm.
While people who are poor tend to give to food banks and homeless shelters
mm-hmm.
and to churches.
And clothing drives,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. Well, we have a few more minutes left. If you've not made your call, this would be a good time to get in a few words about how you respond to those asking for spare change.
Elisa Figueroa, in speaking with different people, speaks to them, and here is what one person said. Panhandling sucks. It's just hard. You have to take so much rejection. And another person said, people have these attitudes that they're lazy. They deserve when they get what they get. They haven't worked hard. they're just looking for a handout, and people with these attitudes lack compassion. And one final comment, this person says that there is no compassion fatigue like there was in the media for a while. The media had compassion fatigue starting in the 90s, and then their interest in homelessness get kind of leveled off, but the public hasn't. About 60% of the people surveyed are willing to pay more taxes to help homeless people. One thing that I encountered reading this week was that here in the United States, those who are on the streets tend to be a higher percentage of the population than in European countries, where the social safety net is stronger than here in the United States. So there are many reasons why there are homelessness, many reasons why people are on the street, and also many reasons why people may or may not respond to the solicitation to give. In the last couple of minutes, give us a call if you have a view on this, whether or not you give or do not give. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187.
We do have one more caller, I believe, and then we're going to go out a little early with a song by Michael Franti and Spearhead, which kind of encapsulates how we as human beings might want to respond to those who are at the moment not as fortunate as we are.
And let's go to Carolyn, your last caller. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your the subject. Two things. One, I can't remember your name, Yael, and I know you're well known, but you made a comment about just a few minutes ago about Hydra,
mm-hmm.
and I think I know exactly what myth that's referring to, but I don't know if a whole lot of other people are aware of the myth you were referring to. One. Number two, I think that the panhandling sucks. I don't know if there are many people who have that on their sign or ID that, but it gets to people, that particular combination of words. I'm a home care worker. I was taking another home care worker somewhere at one just recently, and she said, I gave a gal some food that I bought some for myself and added a portion or two for this other gal who had that on her sign. I think that is a combination of words that registers with people.
Thank you so much.
All I want to say, I want to give you a few minutes to explain what Hydra means.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, for those who are not familiar with the mythological story, a hydra had seven heads, and for every one you killed, two more grew back, unless you got the right head. And those many heads refer to the many different problems that any one of us at any time could ever face. And so when you see someone on the street, even if you don't have the money, even if you don't want to give the money, at least give them a piece of humanity. Give them a piece of yourself. Give them a smile and boost their dignity. A smile is worth $1 million.
Acknowledge our common humanity.
Acknowledge our common humanity. You saw me hungry and you fed me. You saw me thirsty and you gave me drink.
And we'll close now with Michael Franti and Spearhead. Thank you for listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil.
I'm Celeste.
Money, money, money. Nothing but money.
Stars in the PM, and I love the sunrise, so I step out in the AM. The street is black and shiny from the nightly rain. The glory of the light brings evaporation. Mornings fresh, oxygen the cleanest. I take a deep hit, help my mind stay the greenest.
I'm already awake, so I'm not drinking coffee. Don't want a cigarette, cause it's a form of slavery. Walk into the store, cause I need a few items. The sun needs my blood, like a hit of vitamins. I need to buy some food for my dreads. I can't remember why, but I need a spool of thread. Well, a man with dirty dreads, he steps around the corner. He asks me for a dime, a nickel or a quarter. I don't have any change, so I'm stepping along. But as I'm walking past, he sings to me a song. There's a hole in a bucket. There's a hole in a bucket. There's a hole in a bucket. There's a hole in a bucket.
93% of Oregon's prison population return to their communities. This includes people convicted of a sex crime. Many people convicted of a sexual offense want to change their behaviors and seek treatment in our communities. April 29th on Prison Pipeline, a sex therapist explains public misperceptions of and treatment for persons convicted of sex crimes. She'll tell about the lost opportunity to educate a Southeast Portland community after the neighborhood's harsh criticism forced her to move her clinic. That's Prison Pipeline, April 29th at 6:30 p.m.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. The time is just turning to 9 o'clock. Up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all form affects not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO. This program has also been made possible in part by the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or CSTPDX.com.
Wish I was a mole in the ground. Wish I was a mole in the ground. 'Cause if I was a mole in the ground, I'd tear those mountains down.
Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, where it's time now for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Clayton Morgridge, your host for today, along with Joe Clement doing the engineering. On today's show, we'll ask how to build a political movement that would replace the intoxication of consumerism with less self-centered forms of pleasure. We'll hear about gun violence and the failure to pass effective gun control legislation. We'll hear an interpretation of the chaos in Syria. We'll hear music from Richie Havens, who died last week, and Nina Simone, who passed away last month, music that teaches us a lot about freedom. And we'll look back at the life of Monroe Sweetland, a longtime progressive voice in Oregon and the nation. We call this program the Old Mole Variety Hour because the Old Mole represents the timeless forces of resistance to the powers that keep wealthy minorities in control of the lives of the people. The Old Mole is the impulse for revolution that works underground, behind the scenes, getting at the roots of political and cultural power, and then unexpectedly rises up to turn things upside down, clearing the way for democratic movements to organize the world in more democratic ways. The Old Mole is the eternal foe of hierarchy. So, here to start things off is the Old Mole's Laurie Mercier to talk with Oregon State University Professor Bill Robbins about the life and work of Monroe Sweetland, a progressive political icon in Oregon, and about the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association Conference coming up early next month. Laurie.
Thanks, Clayton.
Yes, coming up this weekend, May 3rd through 5th, at the University Place Hotel on Southwest Lincoln near PSU, is the 45th annual Pacific Northwest Labor History Conference, with over 40 presenters focusing on the struggles and lessons of the labor movement's past. And speaking on Saturday evening will be William Robbins, who's on the phone with me now from Corvallis. Welcome to KABU, Bill.
Good morning, Lori.
Let me tell folks about your work. Bill Robbins is Emeritus Distinguished Professor of History at Oregon State University and the author of many publications, including Hard Times in Paradise about Coos Bay, Oregon, Colony and Empire, The Capitalist Transformation of the American West, and most recently, Nature's Northwest, The North Pacific Slope in the 20th Century. His current project is a biography of Monroe Sweetland, whose rich political experiences include serving as the chief architect of the Federal Bilingual Education Act of 1968, and, as Clayton mentioned, was an important progressive figure in Oregon politics until his death a few years ago, and who will be the subject of Robbins' talk Saturday evening at the Labor History Conference. Bill, what led you to study the life of Monroe Sweetland?
Well, it was sort of serendipitous. I was retired and working on a big project on the American West, and it seemed endless, and I wanted something more definitive. And through a friend who was acquainted with Monroe Sweetland's daughter in Alaska, I had been a longtime friend of her since 1969, urged me to thought that I was the appropriate person to do a biography of Monroe. And anyway, one thing led to another, and I met with Monroe's two daughters. I think it was November of 2007 in Lake Oswego, and I was off from there.
Tell us about Monroe Sweetland's activist past, especially beginning in the 1930s when he moved to Oregon.
Yes. I should say that Monroe was born in Salem, Oregon in 1910. And moved away with his father, physician family, to Constantine, Michigan. He grew up in a very small farming conservative community, graduated from high school, went off to an equally conservative